From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Katrina's floodwaters are slowly receding from parts of New Orleans, but angry demands for accountability are piling up all over. New Orleans newspaper, the Times-Picayune, is calling for every official at the Federal Emergency Management Agency to be fired, especially Chief Michael Brown. Congressmen, senators, and many citizens are not far behind. The word from the White House, though, is that the country needs to focus on solving problems, not playing the blame game. Already last Friday, when he visited the wounded Gulf Coast, President Bush himself expressed support for the work of FEMA Director Michael Brown.
Again, I want to thank you all for, and Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. The FEMA director's working 24. They're working 24 hours a day.
The president has now vowed an investigation of his own, but critics ask whether he's the one to hold the government to account for the chaos after the hurricane. The Senate and House are planning their own inquiries. The fever is high. This hour on point accountability after Katrina and a sober anatomy of what went wrong. You can join the conversation. Is it too soon to be talking about accountability? Or is it vital to capture this moment while the failures are right in front of our faces? Can we afford to let incompetence like this pass, or do you hear a blame game here? Who do you hold responsible for the Katrina chaos? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's listen in to the tension in Washington yesterday here as NBC's David Gregory, Chief White House Correspondent, grilled Press Secretary Scott McClellan about the question of accountability.
Where is the accountability? Is the president prepared to say where this White House, where this administration went wrong in its response to Katrina?
You know, David, there are some that are interested in playing the blame game. The president is interested in solving problems and getting help to the people who need it. There will be a time.
Wait a minute. Is it a blame game when the president himself says that we remain at risk for either another catastrophe of this dimension that's not man-made or a terrorist attack? Isn't it incumbent upon this administration to immediately have accountability to find out what went wrong when at any time this could happen again?
This is a massive federal response effort that we have underway. We've got to stay focused on helping those who are in need right now and help them rebuild their lives and get back up on their feet.
Scott McClellan, White House press spokesman, in the hot seat yesterday. People want to know, what about the question of accountability? I am joined now from Washington by Robert Block. He's a Wall Street Journal reporter covering the Department of Homeland Security. A terrific big piece analyzing what went wrong in yesterday's journal. Robert Block, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
And with us from Memphis, Tennessee, Congressman Harold Ford, Jr., Democrat from Tennessee. Congressman, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Speak to the issue of accountability, Congressman. You heard what the president said yesterday at the end of his cabinet meeting. He'll look into it. There's ample time. Let's not get too excited. He will figure out what went right and what went wrong. How do you respond?
Well, I hope he does. It is obvious from what has transpired over the last 8 or 9 days that the federal response was lacking in huge ways. I think there's some truth to the fact that we have to stay focused on search and rescue and do all that we can to save many of the people whom are still there, maybe a few who are holding on to life by a few breaths there in New Orleans, and then focus our attention on those who have left the city, helping them to start a new life. But I don't think it's unreasonable that government can do two things at once. And investigating what happened, how it happened, why it happened, not from the standpoint of wanting to blame someone, but naturally that will come and people have to be held accountable, but to ensure that if something like this happens again, and we must remember, we won't get a warning from the terrorists if something like this is to happen where our federal response is inadequate.
Congressman, where does your attention turn? Where do you think accountability should fall? Do you have any idea yet?
Well, I mean, based on the surface, you have to look at FEMA and determine whether they acted quickly enough. The president on Saturday signed this emergency declaration, essentially calling for the federal government to take control and take charge in the area. The federal government's now, and FEMA and the president are now saying that, or the Republicans are now saying, well, they couldn't agree with the governor of Louisiana and the mayor of New Orleans. You know, in 92, when you had the riots and when they had the riots in California and Los Angeles, first President Bush federalized the guard. LBJ and Kennedy federalized the Guard, when you had racial issues in this country in the 50s and the 60s, or the 60s rather, there shouldn't have been a question about that. And for the president and his team to try to lay blame there, I think is foolish. But I'm more concerned at the moment about figuring out what went wrong and then putting the right people in place to ensure it doesn't happen again. And if Michael Brown is to be blamed, he'll have to accept it, and the president will have to accept moving on with him. If Rumsfeld is to blame, if Chertoff is to blame, I don't know who to blame or where the collapse took place. But wherever it took place, it should be fixed. And
do you trust any
judgment mm-hmm. until this investigation is completed?
Are you confident? Do you trust that President Bush is the one to lead this investigation
Clinton,
nationally?
I know this morning and one of the or should say yesterday called for an independent look at it. That'd probably be the safe thing to do. The 9/11 Commission model may be the best, where you have several respected and known and nonpartisan folks come together and take a look at what happened. I mean, I think this issue is so big, I would hope that no Republican in the Bush administration or nobody working for the no one working for the president, rather, would hold their hold back recommendations just because they'd be critical of this administration. These are Americans that suffered there. They weren't Democrats or Republicans. The storm didn't discriminate. And it's incumbent upon whether it's an independent commission or an internal look. And I think the country would probably feel safer with an independent look at this. But whatever approach is taken, I would trust that those involved in looking into this would rise above whatever political affiliation or political allegiance they may have to the president or not have to the president.
Representative Harold Ford, Jr., Democrat of Tennessee, joining us from Memphis. Congressman, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Let's listen to a Republican voice. Here's Senator Susan Collins of Maine speaking to reporters yesterday about Hurricane Katrina's aftermath.
It is difficult to understand the lack of preparedness and the ineffective initial response to a disaster that had been predicted for years and for which specific dire warnings had been given for days. Katrina was a disaster that scientists, emergency management officials, and political leaders had anticipated for years.
For years, and we saw the aftermath. Robert Block with the Wall Street Journal, you've gone through point by point in a really terrific analysis here, a very sober analysis, and we want to be sober. There's a lot of emotion out there, but we really want to understand how this happened. But you raised the big question at the top of your piece: how could the world's biggest superpower fail so badly in protecting and rescuing its residents from a natural disaster so frequently foretold? Help us begin to answer that question, Bob Block.
Well, I mean, the simple answer, and unfortunately, part of the problem here is we're looking for simple answers. The simple answer is 9/11. 9/11, after the 9/11 attacks, we completely decided to rechange and reshift our focus over what emergency management was and how we were going to deal with events and what the events that we were worried about were. And as a result, we formed the Department of Homeland Security. Mm-hmm. In the formation of the Department of Homeland Security, we threw in a bunch of parts and bits of agencies into this huge behemoth. I think it was the largest creation of bureaucracy since the Department of Defense of Pentagon
right.
was created in the late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And you create new bureaucratic structures. And one of those little pieces that was thrown into the mix was FEMA, which until that time had been a reformed, because FEMA has been here before. The last time was 1992 in the aftermath of Hurricane Andrew, when the current president's father was in power.
Right.
And FEMA's focus at that time was surviving a nuclear holocaust, because it was rooted in the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
And it bungled that. And what I find very amusing is that the arguments that you hear today from the federal government, where the blame is that it was the state of the authorities
right.
that failed, were the same excuses that the same that saying today was used then.
But Robert Block, you're saying 9/11 is the reason we're worse, less prepared today, the reason we saw such chaos last week. But we, and I use the kind of American citizens, we, I think, presumption was that we were pulling up our socks after 9/11, that we would be better prepared the next
time
out.
That's indeed the disconnect. The without a shadow of a doubt, the our politicians and leaders have been telling us since 9/11 that we are better, that from 9/11 we're not perfect, but compared to 9/11 we were better off. The people who were saying that wasn't the case were the people whose jobs are emergency management, this funny little, you know, industry career that these guys have of running, trying to fix things after catastrophes. These guys have been saying since the formation of the Department of Homeland Security, since our focus switched overwhelmingly to fear of attack from terrorists, that we were undermining our ability to respond to natural disasters and our ability to manage emergencies at all, because so much of the infrastructure that emergency managers depend on were intricately linked to the way the funding worked and the way preparedness worked for emergency management.
But couldn't a terror attack have produced a similarly devastating aftermath?
Oh no. So
why wouldn't this be part of the planning for a terror attack?
Without a shot of a doubt. I mean, the real problem is that, you know, there are two separate things going on here. Mm-hmm. One is the terror versus natural hazards struggles that have been going on at the heart of Homeland Security mm-hmm. and our emergency response system since 9/11. But then there's the other larger question, which is exactly what you bring up, is our concern over catastrophic events. One of the reasons that the Homeland Security Department was created was specifically to deal with catastrophic events.
And here we've seen one, and we've seen what happened. We're going to hear a lot more, Robert Block. We've got to take a short break right here. Stand by, if you would. Robert Block with the Wall Street Journal is with us. We're talking about accountability after Katrina and an anatomy of what went wrong. You can join us. Was what we've just witnessed so egregious that heads must roll? And whose? Who do you hold responsible for the Katrina chaos? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking about accountability after Katrina and an anatomy of what went wrong in the chaos that we have all witnessed. Robert Block is with us. He's a reporter for the Wall Street Journal. He and a big Wall Street Journal team have laid out in great detail what went wrong, and we're going to walk right on through that. It's a very sober, reasoned assessment of the problems here. He tracks it back to, of all things, 9/11. You can join the conversation. Is it too soon to talk about accountability, or is it vital to capture this while it's right in front of our eyes? Can we afford to let incompetence like this pass, or do you hear a blame game going on, to use the White House phrase? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We heard from Republican Senator Susan Collins earlier. Let's hear Democratic Senator Patrick Leahy yesterday at a Tuesday briefing on exactly what Bob Block's talking about, all the effort that's gone into security post 9/11.
We've given billions of dollars to the Department of Homeland Security. I voted for those billions of dollars as a member of the Appropriations Committee. We have given as many tools as they've asked for. What in heaven's name was happening?
What in heaven's name was happening? And it's a question that's being asked right now. Robert Block, you describe a group going to Washington, emergency managers, just 2 weeks ago. Meeting with Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff, and you quote the head of that panel, Emergency Management Director from Alaska, saying, "We told them straight out that they were weakening emergency management with potentially disastrous consequences." 2 weeks later, we've got Katrina. Take us further into the message that Chertoff was hearing from his emergency managers.
Okay. For a long time, there was a struggle at the soul of the Department of Homeland Security. In some ways, it's still being carried out between people with a law enforcement perspective and outlook, which is that funds for preparedness need really be geared towards detecting and preventing terrorist attacks. Mm-hmm. And the firemen stroke emergency responders who believe that that's well and good, but that can't be at the expense of our ability to make our cities more resilient, look at ways to make response and recovery also important in case those prevention aspects fail. And they've always insisted that the methods and ways they have gone about dealing with natural disasters are the same disciplines that need to be reinforced now, in some ways more so than they were before. And what has ended up happening is that that's not what's happened. The funds have grown tremendously. Federal funding has grown into the billions of dollars, as we've just heard. But it was mostly for the kinds of things that were not all hazard in reality. They were anti-terrorist. They were chemical and biological weapon suits. They were mobile command centers. They were new police equipment. They were things that didn't have a bearing on what you do in the aftermath of a terrible event, particularly of this magnitude.
So the focus turned away from the aftermath to trying to prevent a terror attack itself.
Right. And not only that, the funding stream itself reshaped the way states themselves were going about their own emergency management preparedness. Emergency managers, at one time FEMA, for instance, mm-hmm. which is the nation's federal emergency managers, reported directly to the president.
A seat at the cabinet table they have.
Absolutely, with a hotline directly to the big man himself. Mm-hmm. We changed that. We buried them inside of a bureaucracy. Well, states followed suit. Where once upon a time emergency managers had a direct line to their governor, now often they are now under a Homeland Security directorate in their states, a component. They've lost the ability to have the ear of the governor, of the top administrator. So what we've been talking about for a long time, what emergency managers have been telling me for a long time and the government, as well as the members of Congress, which is important because as they're all pointing the finger right now, to quote Chris Cox, who is the chairman of the SEC, but prior to that was in charge of oversight of Homeland Security,
yes.
saying, God didn't give 22 agencies to Homeland Security. Congress did.
And maybe the emergency management function has been lost in there. We'll look more at Congress, but I want to check in, if we may, Robert Block, with Washington and how the sort of, call it what you will, the blame game or the cry for accountability is playing out there. Dana Milbank joins us from Washington. He's national political correspondent for The Washington Post. Dana, thanks for being with us.
Hello, Tom.
We all, most of us will at this point have heard or seen the president speaking from the cabinet room, a table yesterday about what he intends. Let's listen to the president for just a moment.
There'll be ample time for people to figure out what went right and what went wrong. What I'm interested in is helping save lives.
There's the president yesterday. Ample time, Dana. How far does that sense of ample time to consider this extend in Washington today?
Well, it's always a little suspect when the president announces that he's going to investigate his own administration. He said that this is clearly not the time, and his spokesman elaborated on that later. He said, the most important thing to do is the relief effort. But they are not waiting for that up on the Hill. Members of Congress have already started investigations. There'll be open hearings as of next week, and they say, they can do this without interfering with the relief effort, and it's very important because the next terrorist strike or natural disaster is not going to patiently wait.
You note that the president introduced the conditional back into this conversation yesterday, that he promised to lead an investigation, but saying it's still a question of if things went wrong. I thought he said last week that it was unacceptable what had happened. Where does the White House stand on whether or not things went wrong?
They've had a little trouble with the message. He said before leaving on his first visit down there last week that the situation has been unacceptable. He then clarified that later in the day to say that he's very satisfied with the government's response. He just says the results are not acceptable, meaning they're doing everything they can, but it's still not good enough. He got a torrent of criticism for backing away from that. Now he goes back in between, says if things went well, we'll duplicate them. If things went badly, we'll fix them. So he's being agnostic as to whether things have gone wrong there. Now he's virtually the only one who remains agnostic on this, as even the leaders of his own party in the Congress are saying this has been a large failure of government at all levels.
Is Congress going to take the bit away from the president on this? Are they going to end up being the institution that does the primary investigation, or will the White House be able to hang on to it? What do you think, Dana?
Well, they've already started investigations. They have the Senate Government Affairs Committee has subpoena power. They are, both sides are talking about a 9/11 style independent commission. The White House would have to agree to that. The president, as always, would like to have this under his authority, but it's too late for that already, that the hearings are about to begin.
And let me ask you finally, Dana, just about the assertions that were made. I mean, there's a sense that there's a moment captured here which tells us something about the way this administration works. The president saying that, you know, I don't think anyone anticipated the breach of the levees. Clearly, they were anticipated. Michael Chertoff asserting that things were well in New Orleans when we were seeing on TV that they weren't well. Is there a sense that in which the administration is abashed about the mischaracterizations that came out here?
Well, these sorts of things always occur, and they've occurred in Iraq. It occurred with the weapons of mass destruction. What may be different here is people are able to see very clearly when the government is telling them something that's not true. So, when, for example, they said there are weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, nobody really knew for sure whether or not that was true. But now, if Michael Chertoff says everything's going just swimmingly down there, then people can see what the television cameras are, their own eyes are showing them a different picture. So I think the situation is the government's always going to put the best face on things, but the actual picture gets shown much more rapidly in this case.
Do you think heads are going to end up rolling in this whole fiasco, Dana, or not?
Well, it's not the president's style to replace people, certainly not in the middle of a disaster like this, but many people suspect that Mike Brown at FEMA is not long for his position. As soon as things quiet down, they'll probably find a quiet way to usher him out of there.
Dana Milbank, national political correspondent for The Washington Post, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Robert Block, what about your sense of Michael Brown's position at FEMA under the umbrella of the Department of Homeland Security? He's taken a lot of heat here. Is it justified or not?
In some ways, it is justified because they failed on his watch. But to be quite honest, behind the scenes, Mike Brown has been fighting the fight that you heard some of the federal emergency managers fighting for as well.
He saying, was don't downgrade our mission.
Right. As a matter of fact, he put in the budget request to the department recently would have revitalized his budget request to the department. Would have revitalized a lot of what he had lost over time, and the department turned it down. As a matter of fact, Michael Chertoff, when he came in, decided to launch a review of how things were going in the Department of Homeland Security, reviving hope among many that some of the damage that had been done to our federal emergency response system would have been repaired. In the end, Mr. Chertoff effectively cemented a lot of those changes and wanted to further downgrade FEMA. So Michael Brown has been in a losing position. You can argue that he wasn't an effective leader. He obviously didn't argue his case very well. And it is true that he does not come from an emergency management background. But what is true
this
is that
this is the former head of the International Arabian Horse League or something.
Right, and he was an Oklahoma lawyer and politician, and which is how he met the people that how he eventually made his way to Washington. But once he got on board as general counsel of FEMA, he quickly understood and saw what FEMA did. His personality was such, and some of the damage had already been done, that he was never able to exert a charisma or direction over the department. So his leadership was not great. But to paint him as someone who had completely lost the idea of what FEMA was about is untrue. In many ways, he was doomed by decisions that had been made above him.
But his performance, even during this catastrophe, I mean, the Times-Picayune has been, the New Orleans paper has been outraged. And they've written an open letter to the president. They say, we're angry, Mr. President, and we'll be angry long after our beloved city and surrounding parishes have been pumped dry, talking about the government's shame here. And the Times-Picayune goes back to that moment on Thursday night when you had Michael Brown, FEMA director, on national television or the next morning saying, we've provided food to the people at the convention center, that's in New Orleans, so they've gotten at least one, if not two, meals every single day. The Times-Picayune says, lies don't get more bald-faced than that, Mr. President. Is this dishonesty? Is it ignorance? How could it happen that FEMA would be so far out of the loop, Robert Block?
Well, I mean, apparently they had terrible communication problems. Someone that I know inside the FEMA Operations Center was saying that on Wednesday night, Chertoff had a televideo conference with all of the principal players and was asking basic questions like, what's the law enforcement situation in such and such a place? How many people are you dealing with? And he could not get straight answers. So obviously, this thing had broken down at all levels. It had broken down locally. It had broken down at the state level, and obviously the feds had communication problems. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, in some ways, people, the average citizen watching CNN or MSNBC was better informed because the TV stations seem to be at more places than our emergency responders.
But those are the same kind of radio and communications problems we saw were so devastating on 9/11, and we thought they wouldn't be back. We'll look at how that could happen, but I want to begin to bring our callers into this conversation. Alex is calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Alex, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just wondering when we're going to hold the president accountable. I mean, if you're the CEO of a company and you bring in VPs of accounting and marketing and sales and they all fail and your company fails, you're held accountable. I mean, this administration now, this president has had two catastrophes. I mean, A, he took us to war under misinformation. Now we have uncountable deaths and suffering in New Orleans. When is this man going to be held accountable?
Alex, the president says, let's not get hung up in the blame game here. Is that what you're doing?
Well, no. I mean, I don't think blame. I mean, blame, it's accountability. I mean, he's the president of the United States. And if he can't appoint people to these high-level positions that can get the job done, I mean, we need to ask ourselves, what are we going to do about it? I mean, how many more of these instances can we allow to occur in this country?
Alex, we've got it, and we appreciate your call. Let's take another caller here from Boston. Jerry is on the line. Hi, Jerry.
Hello.
What do you think?
Well, nothing would please me more than finding a reason to move Mr. Bush out of the White House, but I disagree with your last caller. I believe that there are some events that are so catastrophic that chasing blame really is a mistake. I think we have to open up an independent commission that can look at this and not blame people so that they can honestly come forward with the real answers, the real truth, and not cover their back. I think, you know, we've seen in the world events like in South Africa with their Truth and Reconciliation and other groups that have recognized that there's some things that are just too large to be dealt with in conventional means.
But, Jerry, is there a point at which the country has to say we must have accountability while the facts are clear, while they're right in front of us? Is it possible things get swept under the rug if you take ample time for truth and reconciliation?
I think quite the opposite is true. Mm-hmm. I think if you people know that their careers are clearly at risk, then things definitely will get swept under the rug. I don't think we have the means to prevent that. I think what we really need is people who can step above that and be true citizens of the country and really put forth the best interests of the country and not their own best interests. If we're chasing blame, it's going to be all the harder to do.
Jerry, we've got it, and we thank you for your call. Joining us
Tom,
right now,
can I come in?
Yes, Bob Block.
I just wanted to say one thing, and I think that the real thing that we really have got to get here is not proportion blame, but to fix the problem. And I think that's ultimately what is in need of repair. Obviously, it's important to find out why things went wrong and what led up to it. But I think that the real issue here is to fix the problem. And whether that's taking FEMA back out of Homeland Security or finding a more robust role that appropriate balances all the needs. I mean, I think that's really where attention needs to be focused.
But does the government need to feel the threat of you know, accountability, of heads rolling in order to step up? You say, among other things, that there was a failure to take seriously all these studies and reports over many years warning of this disaster. Does it take some heads to roll to get people's attention and make them really focus?
But the problem is the blame going. It was just not the administration that failed to take this on board. Hmm. It was also Congress.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, many of these complaints were made to Congress as well. And Congress it chose to ignore them because it felt a need to focus all of its attention on terrorism. Now, most likely, you'll end up getting the pendulum swinging, you know, dramatically in the other direction, which is not the answer either.
Which could leave vulnerability on the terror front. In just a moment, we'll hear from Representative Benny Thompson, a congressman from Mississippi. Robert Block is with us, reporter for The Wall Street Journal. You can join us as well. We are talking about accountability for the chaos after Katrina. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. What do you think? The president says he'll figure out what went wrong. Is he the man to do it? And does accountability matter here? What needs fixing in our emergency preparedness, in our leadership, in our politics? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Talk. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com. And Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about accountability after the chaos of Katrina, getting an anatomy of what went wrong. You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. Robert Block has been with us, reporter for The Wall Street Journal, doing yeoman's work in uncovering the many and deep tendrils behind the collapse of government effectiveness in the aftermath of Katrina. Right now, from Washington, we're joined by Representative Benny Thompson, a Democratic congressman from Mississippi. He has called for FEMA Director Mike Brown's resignation. Congressman, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Tom. How are you doing?
We're fine. You say you want Mike Brown out. We're hearing that responsibility runs wide here, maybe even back to Congress itself. Why should Brown's head roll?
Well, he's the leader. He has the primary responsibility for pulling the resources together to address any catastrophe
And what about President Bush saying he'll lead this investigation? Is that good enough for you? Congressman, can you hear me there? It sounds like we've lost that line to Washington, and I'm sorry for that. That was Democratic Congressman Benny Thompson of Mississippi, who has called for FEMA Director Mike Brown's resignation. Let's take a call. April is calling from Bennettsville, Massachusetts. Hi, April. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to make a quick comment. I blame everybody, from the people of Mississippi all the way up to the president, for the simple fact, the things I've seen on TV, the people in Mississippi should have been helping each other to get out, not just going and looting. I didn't see any effort of the people to work together to help their neighbor get out.
But maybe that's just the television coverage, April. I've heard many stories of folks helping out neighbors.
But then another thing, I think they have all these agencies worrying about disasters. They're not involving the public in these. They're involving the fire department, police department. They're not letting the individual people know what they're expected to do in cases of emergency.
But are you concerned that if everybody's to blame, that no one's to blame and we remain vulnerable, April?
Yeah, well, we remain vulnerable. You can see it just by this incident. But, you know, I don't know, the mayor, the governor of Louisiana, and it just went all the way up to the president. Everybody's blaming everybody else. Instead of them going on and getting the job done, they're worrying about who's at fault. That's not the point. Yeah, it is the point, because it's chaos in the departments themselves. They need to know what they're doing. They don't know who's doing what. Mm. They're worrying about pointing fingers, blaming everybody.
So let's take care of people right now, but I've got to think we could do better next time, when and if it comes. And there's, you know, more hurricanes out there right now and potential terror attacks. April, thanks for your call. Robert Block, I wish you'd take us through some of the particulars here that you've laid out, sort of point by point. One you raise, you've already discussed how FEMA's mission was downgraded. Its powers were watered down. Some things were very simple. You say there were too few helicopters stationed in the Gulf Coast area ahead of the storm. Why?
I think that they got taken by surprise. They were counting on a much more mundane storm, an event that than what actually unfolded.
You say that
they miscalculated. It was a simple miscalculation.
All right, a miscalculation there. You talk about the military, you say, stretched by wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, your words in the Wall Street Journal, which left commanders near New Orleans reluctant to commit some active duty units who were closest by. What was the picture there?
Well, the picture was also based on the fact that there seemed to be a disconnect between NORTHCOM, which is the which is based in Colorado, which is the combat unit which covers the United States, also created post 9/11, mm-hmm. which is supposed to have a civilian support role, and what their plans were and how they were thinking of they were going to get involved, and how DHS thought they were going to get involved. So
there was a lack of clarity about such a fundamental thing?
There was a lack
thing?
Of clarity about the mission. And there's another thing. Historically, the military doesn't want, you know, remember when the orders were out to, like, shoot people? These guys just came back from Iraq, referring to the National Guard.
They have guns and they know how to use them.
They have guns and they know how to use them, and I hope they will.
That was the Governor Blanco of Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's a situation in which the National Guard, unfortunately, has found itself in at various times over the decades. It's not one that the active duty military wants to find itself in, because constitutionally it's prohibited from being
right.
That. They're in a role to support the civilian authorities to deal with evacuations. You also had the complaints.
Yet there's a point at which we've all learned and come to expect that if things get severe enough, they'll come in. And I want to come back to your words again. A military stretched by wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, reluctant to commit. Is it clear that the deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan had an impact on military readiness to jump in here?
Well, it definitely had an impact on the National Guard. You had a senior officer inside the Louisiana National Guard saying just 1 month ago to a Louisiana television station, to a New Orleans television station, that a lot of the kinds of equipment that they would need for a homeland role, including in response and recovering to a national disaster, was over in Iraq, remained behind because they were so short over there, they didn't want to let go of the equipment. And he was asking for it back, saying that he needed it.
Saying they've got, for example, dozens of high water vehicles of the Louisiana National Guard in Iraq. He said, this was Lieutenant Colonel Pete Schneider, essentially, that we know they need it, but we need it back here too.
Right, right. And at the time, the other interesting thing was, he said that he thought that they would be able to make do because they had arrangements with the states of Mississippi and Alabama to help them out if they got in trouble. What threw a wrench in that plans was the fact that Katrina rolled through those two Gulf states as well.
Hit everybody. We've got Representative Benny Thompson, ranking Democratic member of the House Committee on Homeland Security, back with us on the line. Congressman, thanks for getting back to us.
Thank you, Tom.
So you say you want the FEMA director out, Michael Brown out, but what about the responsibility of Congress here to get the whole FEMA status sorted out? Should it remain under the DHS umbrella or not?
What we have to do is in the process of doing all we can for the victims of Hurricane Katrina, we still have a fiduciary responsibility to force DHS to do what it needs to do from a management standpoint. And the management of FEMA in DHS has failed this situation miserably. So we can do it. We met with the secretary last night. Told him in no uncertain terms we were disappointed with it. To come and brag about assets you're moving in 8 days after the event is not something you ought to feel good about. FEMA is the domestic preparedness response vehicle for America.
Should it be taken away from Michael Chertoff's Department of Homeland Security or stay embedded there?
Well, there are a number of scenarios. One is to go back like it used to be, elevated to a cabinet level. And you'll probably see a number of positions being taken on that. Some are saying, well, can't we fix it where it is, give it the resources it need, make domestic preparedness a priority, and leave it alone. Some are saying, well, why shouldn't we say what kind of person should lead FEMA, not a political hack, but somebody who has the demonstrated training and leadership in disaster preparedness to be affiliated with the Arabian Horse Association is not a prerequisite for being the director of FEMA.
Sounds like the knife is still out there from Mike Brown. Congressman Benny Thompson, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Kurt is calling from Brookline, Massachusetts. Kurt, you're on the air.
Nice to talk to you.
Good to have you. What do you think?
Well, it seems like maybe Chertoff and Brown will get medals after all of this based on past experience, but it seems like we've just gone through the whole 9/11 commission to find out where communication had broken down and that there were moves to fix that.
Right.
And here we are in another disaster, and it's not fixed, it's worse.
And how can that be? Let us look at exactly that, Kurt, and thanks for raising it. Robert Block, you write that there was a total breakdown of communication systems, an echo of the problems that faced New York officials dealing with the 2001 terror attacks. How could that be? What exactly happened?
Well, they went in and they found out that their communication systems didn't work. They didn't have proper communication. Why are we still in this? Why is this still the after the fact? Because there are fights on Capitol Hill between the different companies that have solutions. Some companies don't want. There's technology out there right now that we could distribute to every city and state in the country that would enable everyone to talk to each other.
But we're just talking about radios here. This isn't nuclear physics, is it?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, everything is got political gain and political loss in the way we've managed this.
Radios?
Bandwidth, of course. There are companies that are opposing the idea of using local fixes to interoperability problems. They want national broadband.
Well,
so
who cares what individual companies think or want?
Well, the political system becomes paralyzed in the face of this. What you do get is nothing done. And that's exactly what we've seen happen.
So that's responsiveness to company interest here rather than to accomplishing what 9/11 clearly showed needs to be accomplished.
They cannot agree on the solution.
Bob is calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Bob, you're on the air.
Hi there. I'd like to look a little bit earlier in the timeline of this whole issue. And it strikes me as incredible that, you know, there didn't exist just a basic municipal, plan to facilitate evacuations of these metropolitan areas. I mean, all of the problems that FEMA is attempting, however ineptly, to deal with are really the result that there wasn't a simple plan to evacuate the citizens, say, of New Orleans. I mean, anyone sitting down around a table for just a few minutes would realize that, you know, that declaring a mandatory evacuation is not going to address the needs of people who lack the resources to evacuate.
Declaring it's not the same as getting it done. Bob, thanks for raising that. It's right on my list as well here. And let us put it to Robert Block. You describe Mayor Ray Nagin telling you at the Wall Street Journal that New Orleans' hurricane plan was to get people to higher ground and then have the feds and the state airlift supplies to them. There's been a lot of finger-pointing up and down the kind of hierarchy here. We've talked
pretty
about
chilling, isn't it?
That's it? That's the whole plan? I mean, what about the state and local responsibility, accountability?
It's unbelievable. I mean, and the fact of the matter is that, you know, our preparedness to deal with disasters varies so widely from state to state. And from even within states, from cities to cities. The thing that I find most horrifying by all of this, and this is where, again, I think the burden of the responsibility for resolving the problem ultimately has got to rest with the Department of Homeland Security. And I find it very difficult to accept when you had Chertoff the other day say, well, yeah, you know, this took us by surprise. Well, wouldn't a terrorist event take you by surprise as well? And once those levees broke, if you had a radiological bomb in New Orleans, you still would have had to evacuate the same number of people. In fact, you would have had another problem. You would have had to evacuate and decontaminate. And yet, it seemed that they were making up the evacuation on the hoof. And New Orleans was a non-Luger city. This was identified even prior to 9/11 as a city that was a possible target of terrorist attacks. Mm-hmm. This was done after the Oklahoma City bombing.
But don't take Ray Nagin off the hook so quickly.
That the state and city had evacuation plans that were viable. There were no backup plans at the federal level. This was exactly as your caller said. I mean, we have to recognize And we have recognized that states and cities are not always up to the task. That's why we have a federal response system. So what you had was in every detail, in every place, this thing fell apart. You had an idiotic system idea at the city level. You had nothing to support it at the state level. And then when you thought that that FEMA and the feds would, you know, ride white horses in to save the day, they didn't arrive when everyone thought they did.
Just whistling Dixie, I've got to ask you about a very specific thing. Those fields of yellow school buses sitting swamped in water, flood water in New Orleans, could they not have been brought into service to get people out of there? Would that have done the trick? That looks like incompetence, immaterial, manifest.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the conditions of those buses were. I mean, what you do raise a very legitimate point, though, that there is no shortage of buses anywhere in this country, whether it was in New Orleans itself or next door in Baton Rouge or even in Mississippi. I mean, one emergency management official from another state was saying to me that what she was shocked by was the fact that the minute that, you know, that we realized the gravity of this, there wasn't a line of buses stretching from New Orleans all the way to Kansas, because that is something that could be easily organized. As to what about those school buses, I don't know. I don't know if they were running. I don't know if by the time the water hit the engines, they were out of commission. Those are beyond me. But certainly, New Orleans cannot escape blame in this. The Times-Picayune did a series not too long ago basically saying that when evacuation came, there'd be a sizable population of the city that was just too poor to move, and special provision had to be made by them, and obviously it wasn't.
So in all this aftermath, you know there are going to be hearings every which way. The president will have no monopoly on that. That is clear already. There may even be an independent 9/11-style commission. If you were king of the mountain, Robert Block, where would you aim this inquiry?
I would aim it at the Department of Homeland Security. I would aim it as basically trying to figure out whether it has its balance correct, whether its national plans to deal with, whether we're putting too much emphasis up front on trying to detect and disrupt a potential terrorist or catastrophic event, and not enough on the back end of it, of what to do in case we miss. And part of the problem, I think, that the guys that came in to make up the Department of Homeland Security, which had law enforcement and military background, I think part of the problem is the idea of response and recovery to them was an anathema. It meant failure. It meant you failed to detect and stop. So it was ignored. I think that we've got to figure out a way to strike that proper balance, that we can deal with all hazards, whether they're man-made and come from terrorism or they come from Mother Nature, and that it's geared not only towards helping us try to prevent them and make our cities and places more resilient to the ravages, but also that if that fails, we have the ability to get in and move our citizens out of harm's way and to help them get back on their feet afterwards.
We've just got 20 seconds here. We've talked about Michael Brown at FEMA. Do you think Michael Chertoff at the top of the Department of Homeland Security is secure in that position as we speak?
I think he is secure, but I think that he has got to, he's going to have to answer to, he ignored some crucial advice, and I'm curious as to why, and I think he's going to have to explain it. But I think he's okay. I mean, I think he took charge when it all fell apart, and he tried to get it back on its feet, and that's what you'd expect him to do.
Big questions right up to the top there and to the White House. Robert Block, terrific reporting for the Wall Street Journal. Thank you very much for being with
You're
us.
You're welcome.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.